G'day, Money Miners, and welcome to another end of a week. I love bloody Friday, JD. Money of mine, the 28th of April. God, it's nearly tax return time. The year's flying, JD.
That's it. Almost wrapped up 1 month of Money of Mine.
Oh, no. Looking forward to getting the Ricciardo back in town. Jack Russell will be back on Monday.
That's it.
I'm liking it because now it's like beauty. I'll give myself 2 days off next week, baby.
Dangle it over his head.
Yes. Mate, what's been happening?
Mate. I think I saw over 500 quarterlies come out today. So last day of the month, last day to get the quarterlies out. So a good day to sort of flush them out.
Is that what happens? It has to be out by to the end. Has to be done before
the month the end after the quarter end. Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, fun facts with JD. Now here's some. I'm going to bring the recap forward. So today we've got a busy one. We've got the Sandfire quarterly that we're going to do a bit of a deep dive into. It was out yesterday. But we're going to do it today. JD's been heavy in the books. And we've also got Paul Cronin and Matty Hine coming on from Adriatic Metals, dialing in from Bosnia.
Yeah, so we've done a bit of a segment. Listeners would have heard on Wednesday.
The other day, getting lost in all these bloody YouTube videos.
That's it. So we're going to just dive a bit deeper into what's going on at the Vares project. I think we've been pronouncing that one wrong. We'll find out shortly.
Yeah, we'll get all the terminology right. But that's going to be very exciting to get them to on. Go deep dive into that polymetallic deposit
over there,
which has hit some cracking intersections of recent. I'm going to bring the recap forward, JD.
Let's
just because there's a few interesting things I didn't want to get missed. We did not get an invite yesterday to the Red Dirt rebranding session. So Red Dirt have been rebranded to Delta Lithium. Flano hosted a bit of a get together, and apparently, I think Mining News, Pay Dirt, and Stockhead got an invite as journos, but I just must have went into the spam folder, JD. I can't believe we didn't get an invite. Or why?
Yeah, they wouldn't have seen that the biggest name in mining media not getting an invite. I'm not sure about
that. Yeah, well, I think the word was going around. A few people asked why we weren't there. So, look, yeah, just we haven't taken offence. We are new, but we are the best.
Yeah, that's right.
Now, lithium, just noted in the quarterlies, the cash for Pilbara Minerals has gone up to $2.68 billion.
Piling up.
They've now got in the bank. So their operate cash margin for the quarter was $919 million. And even bigger than that, Greenbushes, so the IGO Tianqi Albemarle JV, $2.85 billion in revenue for the quarter, which is equivalent at today's gold price of $3,000, 950,000 ounces.
Yeah, so IGO having a bit under 25% of that entire operation there, with their JV having roughly 50%. So
yeah, interesting. Unbelievable amounts of cash getting generated.
And just touching back on Pilbara again, so like you said, cash balance of roughly $2.7 billion. I think they had paid around about $300 million out in dividends over the past quarter. So it'll be really interesting to see what they do going forward, whether that'll be a capital distribution to shareholders, whether they have their eyes on anyone out there. We'll sort of wait and see.
Well, that $919 million profit, yes. I think $300 was for dividends, $150 for CapEx. I think there's about $450 added to the balance sheet. So.
Yeah, ramping up CapEx, like you said, just expanding operations.
Now, let's get into it then, JD, the Sandfire Quarterly. My old employer, as I said, I've bridged a chunk of copper there in the 2200 level if anyone wants to go get it. JD, what's happening with Sandfire?
Don't worry, we'll touch on DeGrussa as well, but let's just break down the quarterly and have a sort of overview of the company. So they produced 18,500 tonnes of copper, slightly down from 20,000. This was in line with expectations, as you sort of said. DeGrussa, where you used to work, is now coming offline. So that was just stockpiles that they've been treating there. So if you look at the group's copper equivalent production, that was 30,000 tonnes for the quarter. C1 costs were up from $1.77 per pound in US dollar terms to a touch over $2. So for those unaware out there, the C1 costs represent the direct costs for mining. So that's your mining, your processing, your site G&A type of things. So it doesn't include things like CapEx, exploration, financing things. So I had my eyes on lower costs across the board at this company. So specifically at Matsa, I wanted to see the costs come down. There's a lot of talk of cheaper energy, and that was in fact the case. So the component that energy made up of C1 costs was previously roughly 20%, and that came down to less than 10%. But overall, the costs were still higher. So the company flagged that treatment charges had sort of re-rated up, and that treatment charge is what's the cost for turning the concentrate into a pure copper product.
So that drop in energy, was that via the use of renewables or cheaper baseload power, or what was it?
Just looking at the macro over the past sort of year, you've seen that there's lots of news coming in the energy side of things in Europe with the crunch on the back of the Ukraine invasion and so on. So energy prices have been cooling off, and that's why we wanted to see that sort of flow on at Matsa. So we'll chuck a chart up for people watching on YouTube, but those cash costs for Matsa put them in the highest quartile of cash cost operators. So not something you want to see, but hopefully
on the ASX?
No, of all copper assets globally.
Oh, right.
So it's a chart we've sourced from S&P Capital IQ. And just on the terms of all-in sustaining costs, so you can do some pretty rough math to get an all-in sustaining cost. It's not something that the company's reported for Matsa. But if you just pull their year-to-date OPEX minus the byproduct credits that they get for the various other commodities that they produce, such as zinc, and then you add the capital expenditure year-to-date, you get a figure of roughly $2.90 in US dollars per pound. So with the copper price sitting at roughly $4, you can sort of work out what a kind of margin is. So I just scribbled down before, say the company produces 123 million pounds per annum in copper, which is what they've guided to at Matsa, and you use a copper price of $3.75, which is roughly what the copper price has averaged this financial year, you get a bit over $90 million a year in cash flow. Now, that's a mine that cost them $1.9 billion, but that's just a bit of back of the envelope maths. So on the back of that year-to-date performance, the cost guidance has increased and production guidance has decreased, both quite slightly, but both going in a sort of unfavorable direction. And interestingly, we've seen Glencore, Freeport, Rio, and a number of other major mining houses across the world cut copper guidance. So we'll touch on to that macro a bit more later.
Now, what about, so you've got Matsa, we've got DeGrussa coming off, you've got, is it Matteo?
Let's go Matteo.
Matteo. Happy to get clarified from anyone. So there, what's happening with them? That's in ramping up to production stage.
Absolutely. So the Botswana operations, Matteo, first concentrate expected this quarter. So they've already started a bit of mining there, processing ramping up now.
Oh, yeah, I saw a big picture of a massive stockpile. I think they've got half a million tonne of stockpile.
Yeah, and they've stockpiled some lower grade stuff as well. Yeah. So they're also in the approvals process for scaling up that operation from 3.2 million tonnes per annum up to 5.2 million tonnes per annum. So I'd expect a bit of capital to go toward that over the coming few periods. And then moving on to DeGrussa, your old...
old stomping ground.
Yeah, that's right. They've transitioned from mining to treating stockpiles there. So they've also initiated a sale process. The company mentioned this in the quarterly that came out yesterday. So a bit of an end of an era there. We'll see if they end up selling it or how that all plays out there. But
well, they have peppered the living shit out of that joint with drill holes. And like they found the Monty deposit, which was only 1 million tonne of very high grade. But other than that, just could not find a repeat.
Yeah, you can't blame them for not looking.
Oh, they hundreds of millions went into exploration there. Word on the decline, I heard that there was a big zinc deposit right under the airport there. That was from the GOs at the pub at some stage. But where the airport was, apparently there was a bit of zinc under the airport.
I can't imagine they wouldn't rip that up if it was so there.
It mustn't have been enough. But yeah, I said, like that, because that was a 10 million ton resource there, 10 million ton, it looked close to bloody 5% copper. Yep. But have not. It just closed off everywhere. They sterilized everything. So, yeah, disappointing.
We'll jump into the sort of bright spots for the company. So Sandfire is hugely leveraged, you could also say highly sensitive to the copper price. Obviously, this goes both ways, but if the copper price were to move favorably, that would really get a lot of benefit and that would really have a sort of magnified impact on their earnings, and also to a lesser extent, zinc as well. They're mining a lot of zinc at the Matsa operation. So if copper prices do sort of remain steady, then I'd expect the, like we sort of touched on, the ramping up at Mateo and the additional capital they'll need to build the bigger mill and so on to sort of constrain free cash flow over the next few periods. But then after that, they'll have a lot of free cash flow that can be used to pay down the debt. And yeah, in quite a few years' time, I'd expect dividends to come back again.
Because they're increasing from about 3 and a bit to 5 and a bit million tonne at Mateo, aren't they?
That's right, yeah.
Yeah. Now, you mentioned the copper macro landscape, and look, even Bill mentioned yesterday, like the pending metal shortage, especially with copper. It's been it's nearly 2 years people have been talking about it, but we just haven't seen that real appreciation in the copper price.
Yeah, you'd be pretty hard pressed to speak with anyone in the mining community and not hear about how copper and these battery metals are going to do so well over the next decade. So the majority of base metal stocks were down over the first quarter of this year. But Sandfire, actually, they held up quite well. So I think that was probably on the back of Oz getting taken out, Sandfire now being the largest sort of pure play copper producer on the ASX. And as well, if you compare it with the other base metals, the copper price held up much better in comparison to zinc, nickel, and so on. So what we'd previously touched on was a lot of the other majors paring down their guidance for the current financial year. And if you sort of pair that with the sort of thematic, like you just touched on, the electrification of everything, the outcomes are kind of bullish environment for copper. So a lot of sort of analysts, I think, had seen S&P Global come out with thoughts on a copper deficit sort of from 2025 and onward. But, you know, perhaps that could happen a bit sooner rather than later. And just to tie that back to Sandfire again, that sensitivity that they have to the copper price, you know, there is a chance that their cash flows could be really boosted by this high copper price, and that would really help them pay down that huge amount of debt that they took on, as well as pay that capex that we mentioned for Mateo.
But they're, in terms of, like, if you just look at direct market caps, like I think they're scheduled to produce about 120,000 tonne of copper per year, which is what, once everything's ramped up, and Oz Minerals that was their FY22 or 23 guidance was 120,000 to 140,000 ton. Sandfire's sitting at $3 billion. I think what did Oz get bought for? 7.5 or 8?
In Aussie, just under 10.
Under 10. So,
and Sandfire capped at 3 now.
Yeah. So definitely in terms of their future production, it's like, yeah, it's interesting seeing how they're valued at the moment. That was one comment on hot copper I noticed.
So I just wanted to make one more comment on the leadership at Sandfire. So the company's in a period of transition. Like you said, DeGrussa coming offline, Mateo coming online, huge acquisition with Matsa. They raised $1.25 billion in equity in late 21, as well as another $850 million in debt. About a year later, they had an entitlements offer and raised another $200 million in equity. And in this period, you've had Carl Simic, who had done a really transformational job at the company, a great job for a long period of time, stepped down. You had an interim CEO, and now Brendan Harris, who by all accounts is a great operator. He's come from South 32, experience at Macquarie, so slightly different type operations. South 32 obviously being spun out of BHB, coming from a very different end of town. But something like a comment I'd like to make is, as an investor, you'd really want to see sort of continuity in that leadership. You'd want to see the people, the team that sort of bring about the change, sort of see it through. So it's just a thought I had on where the leadership's at that company, but we'll sort of see how they go about bedding down all these changes.
Well, I suppose Carl had his time in a way, because he took them from, well, he was a managing director for an exploration company until they hit this, and then took it through this whole process. And I guess I suppose you give credit to him seeing DeGruyser through to the end, in a way, and it like did go through the
absolutely, I guess, more than 10
years. Acquisitions and of Matteo and Mazza. And unfortunately for him, there wasn't much or hardly any organic growth at DeGruyser.
Perhaps that's the view that the company's taken. They want people from that operational background now that they have the sort of multi-asset producing copper business with assets across the world, getting someone from a South 32 type of business who have assets all around the world, have experience in that regard to sort of steer the ship for the next period.
He's probably just cashing in, I'd say. Like you look at they're sitting at $6. They did have released some dividends over the years. But, God, when I worked there, they were up to $8. And that was, what's that, 9 years ago?
Yeah.
Like, because there was that, I think there was that. That was when they were making 400 mil a year or something. But that was where there was still that hope of finding another DeGruyser.
Yeah.
But it just never happened.
Yeah. And like all commodity businesses sort of fluctuate in line with the copper price over a long-term period.
Right, good. I know you've been in the books with them for a good 24 hours, JD. What's your take on Samphire, where they're at the moment? Putting all that together into a bit of a, this is not investment advice, but you can give a bit of a take.
Yeah, it's sort of a lot to wrap your head around, a lot going on at the company, sort of coming from a low base, but I mean, I think the key takeaway is that sensitivity that they have to the copper price. So there seems to be quite a few copper bulls out there, and it seems like a relatively good way to play that. If you're quite bullish on the copper price, then that would flow on quite well to Samphire being able to pay down that debt, being able to pay that CapEx quickly and sort of down the track return capital to shareholders.
So if you look and you look at BHP have taken over Oz Minerals to essentially secure copper supply for the future. That's why I read it. Samphire are looking to produce similar amounts of contained copper. As we said before, once Mazza and Matteo get to full capacity, they're going to be anticipating 110,000 to 120,000 tonne of contained copper production, not including all the other byproducts. Do you think Samphire would be on the radar for any companies looking to get secure future copper supply, or the Mazza operation performance a risk?
It's a tough call, Matty. Like I sort of said, they've got that great sensitivity to the copper price. The share price has appreciated quite a bit over the past half year or so on the back of sort of anticipated potential takeover activity. We've seen quite a lot of M&A in the metals and minings, in particular in the base metals space over the past 6 months. And that Mazza operation, just to touch on again, they really want to be driving those costs down and ramping up that production a little bit more and just fine-tuning that operation to produce a bit more.
Considering they paid, what would you say, 1.8, 1.9 billion?
Yeah, 1.9 billion US. So that was quite an expensive acquisition. So, yeah, everything sort of has a price, obviously, and we'll see what the share price does over the coming period. A lot of these acquisitions we've seen lately have been somewhat opportunistic on the back of poor share price performance, and you can't say the same for Samphire at the moment, but we'll see how that looks over the near term.
Very good, JD. Very good deep diving, mate. Isn't next quarter going to be a lot simpler now that you've done all these initial deep dives? So you'll be a bloody guru. You'll be a walk in the park. You'll be able to start having lunch soon.
That's it. Easy by the day, mate.
Now, for everyone that is listening on the podcast version, make sure you go to our YouTube channel, the Money of Mine YouTube channel. We're putting a bit of effort to get all the charts and the graphs and the multimedia to references what we're talking. So it's a bit of an interactive experience, you'd say, JD.
Plug your editing work.
Put all my bloody hard work to waste and not watch it. So if you want to know what we're talking about as we're doing it, and make sure you click subscribe and notifications and give it a share, like all that. Just click everything you can bloody find. Get the algorithm pumping. Right, now let's get on to Adriatic. We did a piece on them the other day. So Adriatic have the Vares. Is that how you pronounce it, JD?
I think it might be Varesh.
Varesh. Varesh mine. Polymetallic deposit under development at the moment in Bosnia. So, and it's a very, very interesting project. We talked about it the other day. So we've got two of the main men that are in Bosnia as we speak, coming on to give us a bit of in-depth in the crux insight.
That's right. So we've got CEO Paul Cronin and GM of Ops Matt Hine coming on the show to sort of chat through the construction phase at Adriatic.
And we've got them on the blower right now. Paul and Matt, thanks for coming on Money and Mind, lads. How are we?
Pretty good, mate. Good.
Good. Thanks for having us, guys.
You wouldn't get too many podcast call-ins from Bosnia too often, do you? Is it a bit bit unconventional for a Friday morning over there?
Oh, look, we get a few of them actually out of London and Spain.
Oh, the bloody competitors.
So we've done a little bit this week already.
Certainly none of your caliber though, Matt. So
yeah, we're off to
this one. A sweet talk.
That's all right. We haven't got Trav here today to bloody grill you, so you don't have to even butter us up today. So she's all good.
So I think we've been making some mistakes right off the bat. How do you say Varesh? Is it Varesh or Vares?
Varesh with a SH sound.
There we go. And and the deposit as well. How are we saying that one?
Oh, that's like a pizza. So Ripizza.
Ripizza. And while we're at it, what else did we bugger up in the first episode that we did on Adriatic? You might as well get it out now. You might as well grill us for a change.
Well, firstly, props to JD for covering us. You're certainly our favourite of the trio, mate. So keep on watching.
Appreciate it, guys.
You got most things right. LSE listed, yes, but don't forget we're also dual listed down there. So there's some Aussie roots. The Barite piece, yeah, plenty of that, although we didn't ascribe any value to it in the NPV count, so that's some upside for us.
We did figure out that mistake afterwards. Yeah, JD did pick up on that. So we thought we'd get it out straight away, and we do apologize.
I'll sling that one to a Trav. I think he chipped in on that, but that's all right.
Yeah, that's a good part of a team on a podcast, hey? You
can share other people to blame.
Well, it's funny. It's good the bits we have to edit out that don't get shown, but I'll give you a laugh. After he said the Barite thing, I'm like, Trav, what the hell is bloody Barite? He's like, I don't know. There you go. Barite? What is, while we've got you, shoes of the gurus, what is Barite?
Well, mate, if you ask the Saudis, they'll tell you it's the most important commodity in the world because it's basically a blowout preventer on oil drilling. So it's a densifying agent that they use in all oil and gas exploration and production. So that's the biggest demand for the product. Where you get the most value ascribed to the product is actually in some of the industrial uses. So they use it in medicine. You know, when they shove that drink down you and x-ray where it's going through the gut, that's Barite. Tastes like shit. And then it's primarily used in high-end manufacturing, so brake pads, certain paints, et cetera. So there's a big market for it, particularly in Central Europe, in Germany, Czechoslovakia, Austria. But it's got to have the right attributes depending on what you want to use it for. And then we would be producing a huge amount of it. And there isn't a market big enough for that to justify the cost and the logistical headaches that would come with moving, 200,000 plus tons a year of this stuff on a railway line through the mountains down to a port and off to wherever. So we decided we would basically build the project without the Barite circuit. That cut a bit of CapEx out, cut out a lot of OpEx as well for us. And if in the future we find that there is a market for that Barite, we can easily add that circuit back in. We've allowed for it in the plans. But at the moment, that stuff's making great paste for the backfill.
So with the Barite, if you don't have that circuit in, do you are you able to stockpile it separately, or do you lose it forever, or you only get it out of new areas of the ore body? How's that going to work if you do include it later on?
No, it'll be largely getting. There'll be some that we can access from the tailings facility. But largely it'll be, extracting it from the mine in the future once we've decided to build that circuit. But I think that's highly unlikely, guys, to be honest with you. There's so many other sources of Barite available. The one thing that has happened with barite, it's been added right to the top of the European critical minerals list. And so we've got a group going to Brussels to just sort of understand what impact that might have on us, and whether that means that there's going to be a desire for someone in Europe to buy it and stockpile it anyway. So there may be some value attributable to it.
Yeah. Now let's get it. We went over the project. I wouldn't say in immense detail, probably not to your guys' standards the other day. But look, there's an absolutely stonking drill here you have just released for your project. I'm reading it. 17.5 meters at 2,000 grams per ton silver equivalent, or 65.5% zinc equivalent. Absolute stonking. So, and I've heard from a little birdie on Hay Street, you had to get this re-assayed because it was that high and you were unsure it was assayed correctly.
Well, we round robin a random amount of assays anyway. But I guess over the last 6 years, every time I've seen something like that come back in, I've been a bit cautious and sent it off for a second go. I don't want to rush it out and then come back later and go, that was a mistake. So, yeah, we did get that one reassayed. We threw the XRF over it straight away. But, look, you can visually tell that's exceptionally high grade. And you could be blind and still tell it's high grade just by the mass of it.
So if you're going to compare, because the mine that comes to mind with grades that you're looking at is Cannington in Australia. Are your grades, would you say they're comparable? Well, look, Cannington back in the heyday, I've got 2005, they were 18 million tonne at 10% lead and 477 grams silver. But is the grades you guys are seeing, is that pretty up there with one of the highest grade polymetallic mines in the world we're seeing at the moment in the current day?
Yeah, absolutely. I can't think of a higher grade polymet out there, actually. And what we are seeing is we continue to unravel the structural geology here. We're finding more and more zones of higher grade material. So this drill hole results we put out last week, that was a whole new zone of material. Now, we only put out one drill hole into it, but we have drilled others into it now, which we're waiting the assay results on. And as I said to you, you don't need to be a geologist to know that this is high grade. You just go down and pick up the core and you can feel it. But what it is devoid of barite. And so, basically we think the metals have basically pushed the barite out. So it's really quite interesting. It's throwing open the whole geologic model. The guys are down in the core shed are pretty pumped about this stuff. And we're watching it very, very closely, every day, what the lithology looks like as they get closer and closer to those zones.
I mean, when you look internationally, guys, you spoke about Cannington. The DFS we did 2021, we're already at the lowest end of the equivalent cost curve. That was on the basis zinc 4 to 8%, lead 3 to 5%, and silver 200 grams per tonne on an all equivalent of around 469. And you'd see the results we're putting out are exceeding that. Like, we haven't released a resource model update. I think by next week or the week after, it'll be 1,000 days. Yeah, we've had three rigs going non-stop throughout that time, and it just keeps getting bigger and bigger and bigger. So, like Paul said, we're really pumped to be able to put something out mid-year with an update. We've had, plenty of people come to site, and it's quite cool seeing them try and run the back of the napkin numbers and what it could be and running out of space in the napkin.
When I first started drilling here in 2017, I was working with a geologist, an old mate of mine from Perth called Bob Annett. And Bob planned out the drill program, but, just trust the banker to decide where the next hole should go, right? So we put in this Perla, 35% zinc, 65 metres, absolutely great hole. First hole we've drilled up here. Second hole, I said to the guys, stick it here because I'm pretty sure that this is moving in this direction. And we hit nothing, absolutely nothing. I drilled it to 400 metres, absolutely zero. Last hole I ever planned. But, we've got this cutoff date for the end of April for our drilling to go into the new resource update, which is due out in July. And I asked the guys to drill me another little bit of a Hail Mary. You know, just tell me how far this lower zone goes. Now, that drill hole was just about to hit target depth when the rods got stuck, and they've decided they're going to have to re-drill it. But I've extended. I'm so excited about that hole, just looking at the lithology of it, in the lead-up to where we interpreted the mineralized zone to be, that I've deferred that cutoff date to allow that hole to be incorporated. That's the sort of, you know, dynamicism of this deposit and how much it's constantly changing on us, but it's always delivering positive surprises.
So just one more on the exploration side of things, guys. You've referenced in a couple of the recent announcements a sort of gap between Rupica and Rupica North West. So what are the chances that sort of system hangs together? How does the technical team sort of feel about that at the moment?
Well, the holes that we drilled on the gap zone were on the up dip portion, which is typically the skinny part, shallower and slightly to the west. The holes we're drilling now are on the down dip portion of that. And what it is showing is there's pretty good continuity between the main ore body and the northwest zone. And the holes that we drilled in 2020 in that area just had the wrong azimuth and we missed it. But that's the nature of this deposit. It's pretty easy to miss, but when you hit it, you know about it.
And, you know, close to the mine plant at the moment in Rupica, so really from where the capital development is going in, it's from one end of Optus Able to the other. It's going to be so close. Natural extensions and all our existing infrastructure is already going to be sunk around there, so we could be bringing it in quite quickly.
So also in the recent quarterly, production got pushed back 5 weeks to November of this year, although there was a reference that there was an option to potentially bring in portable crushers and sort of gain back that 5 weeks again. Have you guys put any more sort of thought toward that, or is that just a decision for a later date?
No, we are working on bringing in portable crushers. So, you know, portable crushers typically around here, the ones that we've got currently on site for the civils, you know, they're doing 10 tonnes an hour. They're really small. We need much bigger than that. So we can bring in a few crushers and we can start to sort of just move material over to the coarse ore stockpile. And we can do that a number of different ways. We can take run of mine and crush it at the mine site, basically directly into trucks and bring it up here to the coarse ore bin. Or we can bring run of mine directly to the plant and we can crush it here and of course we'll bin. So there's a number of options available to us. We're just waiting to see how these earthworks go so that we can get that main crusher in place, because that's obviously 200 plus tonnes an hour. So we really want to see that operational as soon as possible, which will mean that we've got the maximum amount of stockpile when that plant is available to start in October. You know, the commissioning of the plant's actually going to start in July. If all of our major long lead time items either have been delivered or are en route. The only thing that's been delayed as a result, we bought it in Turkey, was just some components of the main conveyor feeding system on the plant, and that's not going to arrive until early September at the latest. But other than that, everything will be here ready to go. So we're in pretty good shape. And if we just keep, you know, doing what we're doing, which is being dynamic, every time we face a problem, we solve a problem, I think we'll be able to bring that date in a little bit.
So I'm keen
but
to
this, look- the one thing about this deposit is it keeps throwing up surprises. So, you know, Matty's got his mine plan here where he's going to, you know, go through X amount of development waste at the development ore, and I reckon that ratio is going to change for the better. That's my bet.
There we go. So I'm keen to move on to the financial sort of side of things now. And I heard on a podcast, I think it must have been done about a year and a half ago, that once the project is online, it'll add 1.6% to Bosnia's entire country GDP. And in the latest presentation, I saw you guys have a corporate tax rate of 10% and sort of equivalent 1% NSR. How do you guys sort of weigh up that risk of the sort of goalpost changing once you guys are up and running? Like, I understand you've done a huge amount of work on the ESG front and building that sort of social license, but I'm keen to get your guys' thoughts on that.
Hopefully they don't take 50% like PNG do.
No, I don't think that's likely. Look, the royalty at the moment is based on per tonne of ore put through the plant, and it works out at about €2 per tonne of ore. So the total royalty per year is €1.6 million. That is not high enough. In any jurisdiction, that is not high enough. And it's logical to expect that at the five-year renegotiation point, that's going to go up. And I don't think it's going to be a problem. I think it going up will add longer-term value. We're going to be here for 20 years plus, and we've got to make sure we give enough back. So our sustainability programs deal with a lot of those things. But if you're an NGO that wants to pick on a mining project, that'd be a number I'd pick on and say, well, they're not giving enough back. So we know that that's going to increase, and we're not unhappy about it because it's, quite frankly, it's minuscule. The 10% tax rate, well, that's obviously a federal issue, and that would affect all companies in Aussie. Now, there is a global movement to see a minimum corporate tax rate of 15%. If that happens in my lifetime, I'll be surprised. So I don't expect Bosnia's corporate tax rate to change, but I do expect that royalty, that concession fee that we pay to the canton to go up, although I don't think it'll have a negative impact or a particularly negative impact on the project economics, but it will help us preserve our social license here, which is, quite frankly, our biggest asset.
Great. So just one more on the sort of theme of financials.
And then the mining questions are coming. You get ready, Matty.
So when you guys announced with Orion the financing of the project in early 2022, there was reference to a $250 million potential facility that Orion might put forward for you guys to look at acquisitions, and you've sort of previously highlighted a European focus. Is this something that's still available, and what sort of opportunities have you looked at or are you looking at?
Yeah, Orion, in our original term sheet, there was a $250 million facility that would be available. It was quite loosely defined at that point in time, and we haven't really worked on better defining that because, you know, we're just busy focused on delivering cash flow from Rupitsa. But I think subsequent to that, we've had a lot of groups approach us suggesting that they'd like to work with us on potential acquisitions and offering to help fund those. So will we end up using that Orion facility? Probably not. And not because we're not looking at making acquisitions. We absolutely are. But we'll find there's probably cheaper sources of capital available to us, including our own profits.
Righto, Matty, it's mining time. You ready, Cobber?
I don't think I'll ever be ready for you.
As I said, you just haven't got Travi, so you'd be right. I saw you've had dramas with the decline. Can you give us a bit of insight, mate? Was it an unexpected bit of shit ground? Was it what was the go with it?
Well, we didn't have you here on a jumbo for a start, but
I'll be blowing them out like anything.
I guess to paint a picture and take a step back, where we're working, this is the first hard rock mine in this part of the world in over 30 years. And where we're working, I'll send you a photo after, altitude over a kilometre, minus 20 degrees Celsius in winter with plenty of snow. And it really is out in the wilderness. So we've got an intrepid team out there. And really this time last year, we didn't have a single cut of development. So we're well progressed now. Two declines to access the ore body. We've seen the number of headings go from 2 up to about 6 in the last month. And we're about 38 metres away from the ore. As you know, Matty, once you hit those footwalls and you turn out and you open up about 12 ore drives, the whole beast changes. So I'm really proud of the team out there with the progress to date. Look, has been some poorer ground, I guess, Now, every time you go to a mine, they'll say poor ground. What's it mean? Now, our host rock in the ore is really good. So dolomite, 200 MPa. You'd run those high frequency drifters, and see some good development rates. So,
and that's in the ore, did you say?
In the ore, yeah.
Oh, that's handy.
Yeah, so alterated dolomite. We've got all the good gear. All the orange stuff, good power packs, good drifters, anything you'd see in the gold fields, which puts us in a really good spot. Obviously, additional headings will help. The declines are sedimentary, right, in the footwall. So sandstone, mudstone, limestone, chert, in abandoned clays. The team's done a fantastic job of working through it. Capital development in the footwall only represents about 25% of the future life of mine development. Majority of those declines are in now, and as you know, over a 10-year life of mine, you chip away at them to open up future levels. So a lot of the hard, heavy lifting's done. We're in a really good position, and we expect to realise it in the next 3 months or so.
So have you got expat operators over there, or is it a local workforce for the underground side of things?
Yeah, look, my and Paul's accent is the exception, so... we don't have a lot of expats. This is a Bosnian asset. We want a Bosnian team to lead it. Yeah, we do recognise that takes time. We need to bring in good teachers. It's interesting. I listened to the 1 year guys did with Bill and develop, and the number of resumes being thrown his way. It is amazing the number of ex-Yugoslav people throughout Australia working out of Africa who do want to come home to work. So that's who we're really targeting. We want a fully nationalised workforce within 3 years, but it's going to be an investment in our local people to get there. So, look, we do have some expats, certainly on Adriatic's side. I think you can count them on two hands at the moment. We're going to need a few more, particularly with the ramp-up in production as we start opening up some open holes and get a pace plan up and going, but certainly not as many as you'd see on those fine flight operations throughout Africa and other parts of the world.
Well, you just take a bit of Bill's secret sauce, mate. Just pay him shitloads more than everywhere else, and you'll have no dramas getting the CVs.
Yeah, well, I'm trying to change the sauce and get just as high quality people, which we are, without the pay. So,
good luck with that.
We do pay very well, not just direct but indirect. So, the lifestyle you get here is pretty incredible. So close to the Adriatic coast, and we're actually popping off to Dubrovnik this weekend. So something you don't get to experience at all, really, in mining as a residential opportunity.
I think it's the only mine in the world where you can wake up in a European capital city, go for a ski in the morning, mine a stoke before lunch, and go to the beach in the afternoon.
It's a bit better than we get in the Pilbara, right? Hey, Batty, could you tell us a bit about the ore body and the proposed sequence and strategy, because polymetallic is also you've got transverse stoping, you've got longitudinal stoping. Are you looking, is there primary secondary method, are we center out, like, and I guess how you're looking to control the stressing and de-stressing of the rock with these, which can be a problem with big polymetallic ore bodies, which is in layman's term the ground can get very shit.
Yes, No, we all understand that term. I think, try to keep it high level. If you think of the ore body in a cross-section view, it's only what we've defined is 300 metres deep at the moment. It's going to go deeper. So relatively shallow to the surface. At the top, sub-vertical and, 3 to 5 metres wide. So we'll look to do that as longitudinal stoping. Then it dilates in the middle, and that's where we'll go transverse, primary, secondary stopes. Nice thick levels, 25 metre sub-levels, high productive stopes, and then pinching out towards the bottom end, or not pinching out, just reducing from, 15, 20 metres wide back down to about 5, but still open at depth. So, look, pace will be our friend. Paul spoke through the benefits of the barite. It's dry stack tails here, so we'll be backhauling a lot of those tails to be used underground within the paste fill. Really, really exciting, pretty conventional, right? So most guys in mining would have seen this mining method before, so we're not breaking the rules or doing anything new. In terms of access, to a dozen ore drives on a level, so it gives us operational flexibility in the schedule. They're looking at centre access, The stress won't be too big a issue. So particularly you think our footwall, you know, the sedimentary deposit. We're in a pretty good position there. Not much seismicity, not much groundwater. Nice little mine to be able to kick off as the first one for Adriatic.
And how are you looking at employing with the paste fill? Top down, I guess, is your best method to, you know, avoid having that sill intermediate level getting crushed by stress and being problematic, but it's usually more difficult to paste fill and you lose the potential for rock fill. Are you looking at bottom up at all or multiple mining fronts? Can you give us a bit of insight there? For all the engineers out there to just froth on that stuff.
Yeah, well, it might just be the two on this call. Mate. Yeah. So I won't overindulge.
I've still got my engineering boots in the closet cover.
High level, mate, bit of both. This ore body gives us great opportunity and flexibility, right? So we're going to look at three different mining areas, really, to give us scheduling flexibility. Longitudinal open stoping at the top, right? So that'll obviously bottom up with a CRF or CAF equivalent. Through the guts of the ore body, absolutely paste. Top down there is a preference. It can be a bit of a bugger, as you know, coming in and working back on top of paste, all those type of things. But there are areas we can go bottom up too. So the geometry of the ore body provides us flexibility in each area and the benefit of a paste plant, shot creep plant, plenty of waste rock and plenty of dry tails is we can really have the benefit from an engineering function to pick and choose what works best in each area.
And have you got a good method for tight fill and upper top down stopes with paste fill? I always found that was the drama with primary secondary was tight filling the primaries so there wasn't the big void up the top because getting the actual fill holes up there, is it something you're looking into for the when it all gets happening?
The guys are working through all that now. So we've got a pretty good methodology. Obviously the bottom part's relatively easy, right, with the fill hole, the breather and the wall. Like you said, it can be tough depending on your layout on that top level, how you get real tight in there. But we'll get you to site, Matty. So, first stope, end of this year, we'll be able to send through some photos or come and see it in the flesh on how we propose to do it. So, one thing I would say is we have some exceptionally talented people here. So I know in Australia it's bloody hard to get a mining engineer, a surveyor, a geologist or anyone with a degree. And while there hasn't been a lot of hard rock mining in the Balkans or Bosnia for 30 years, there are some fantastic universities that kick out a lot of mining engineer and geology grads. So, we've really had our pick and I'm super impressed at the level of talent that our business effectively has exclusive access to.
Well, mate, I'm getting better by the day at both the jumbo and engineering. Every day I'm out of it. So I'll hear back. The banker's itching to bloody ask his finance stuff. He's fallen asleep with the mining talk. So cheers for that, Matty. That was great, mate. I really, really appreciate the insight.
Guys, I've just got one more on mining in Europe sort of in general. Do you guys have a take on how you sort of see this in, say, 5 or 10 years' time? Is it getting harder? Is it getting easier with the sort of need for these critical metals and the not wanting to actually, get the mines up and running? How do you guys sort of see that?
Look, both the European Union are making sweeping changes at the moment with respect to the way they want the mining industry and the primary production of metals to contribute to the economy, including putting up a 2 billion euro fund to basically advance assets across the region. They're going to bring in legislation at the national level, which limits permitting to 2 years, right? This is a paradigm shift in European mining, and it's being done because Europe doesn't want to be reliant on Russia and China for its raw materials or Africa. It's happy to rely on the US, it's happy to rely on Australia, and you'll see some preferred arrangements put in place there. But the messaging that we're getting from all of the European governments is really clear. Come and do exploration here, or we've got some old assets we'd like you to have a look at. So we think this is a fantastic time to be building a team that can develop assets in a European context, not just in a European geography, because it is different. Europeans look at things differently by virtue of the fact it's a continent of villages and towns where you're never far from a population centre. And you've got to consider that in all of your in all of your mind design and thinking. And so I think Adriatic's in a great position to be able to capitalise on that paradigm shift. And I think the team that we're developing here, these young, very bright engineers and GOs and environmental scientists, are going to be incredibly valuable to this company as it looks to expand its operations into other jurisdictions in Europe.
Well, I don't want to point out the blatant obvious, but you just couldn't have picked anywhere further away from Australia. Have you shipped and moved over there? Are you living there permanently or got family over there? What did you end up doing?
Yeah, I live in Sarajevo with my wife and two boys. And,
oh, awesome.
Matt, it's not a bad thing being that far away when you're a 20-year member of the Fremantle Dockers. So
well, you might see yourself through the whole mine life, the bloody rate they're going, mate. Well, they're going better than the Eagles anyway.
I don't know what that's saying. But, we have, right? And, yeah, Paul's no different. And to the handful of expats who have, it's a great lifestyle. And I think, what you find is there actually is quite an expat community, particularly through the Balkans. There's some mines in Bulgaria. There's a couple of obviously the Sandvik guys over in Amsterdam. So there is a handful of people out of the West Australian market who have moved over and called this home for good reasons. So, it's a great lifestyle while being able to progress what's a great career in our favourite industry, finding.
Good stuff. Now, well, if you're in Amsterdam, say good day to Mal Major for me if you're in Amsterdam.
No, mate. Well, we've got plenty of sand here, so we'll be getting out on site soon, I'm sure.
Yeah, well, a cup of coffee is a buck and a beer is two, so it's not a bad place to be.
Oh, there you go. Well, everyone's vaping over here now because the darts are too expensive. So it's,
the darts are even cheaper. A packet of Marlboro Gold is $4.
Oh, there you go.
Matty, we can't let you go on a site visit, mate.
Oh, I've even started vaping myself going through this tough financial time I've got on the vape. So anyway, I'm bloody getting death stared for just having a suck then. So not too easy. Thanks so much for getting in touch and really giving a good insight. Really love the mining insight as well, Matty. So really appreciate that. And look, we hope it keeps delivering. We hope you, like, pardon the pun, we hope you fill in the gap.
Thanks a lot, guys.
Thanks, guys. Appreciate your time.
Thanks, guys. See ya.
Yes.
Right, good on you, lads. Oh, bloody, what absolute gentlemen. So they give you a bit of insight. At least they corrected all our wrongs, JD.
Yeah, that's it. And pretty exciting project, I think between the three of us, we've come from a pretty low base, what we knew about what's going on in Vardesh, and now we're the experts, eh?
Very much so. Well, mate, another successful week of Money of Mine. If anyone is still listening, she was a bit of a long episode because we are, but hey, you can't not make the most of opportunities like getting two guys on from Bosnia. So
that's it. Like you say, Matty, just good quality content.
Good quality, though. They will be listening, mate. Have a good weekend, Money Miners.
That's it. Hooteroo.
We're going to be back full steam ahead next week. Hooteroo.
Hooteroo.
The information contained in this episode of Money of Mine is of general nature only and does not take into account the objectives, financial situation, or needs of any particular person. Before making any investment decision, you should consult with your financial advisor and consider how appropriate the advice is to your objectives, financial situation, and needs.